Kids and people need hugs more than they need things. Now you heard that, and people.
Yeah.
Kids and people need hugs more than they need things. I always use the illustration of Ellen and her grandchildren, how she goes over there instead of bringing them priceless objects of the art, she brings them her personal love. And they love that more than anything. She'll send them a tape recording telling them how wonderful they are and what geniuses they are and what fabulous kids they are. And they will play it, and she'll come to visit them, and they'll play it to her while she's there so she can hear what she said. But kids don't need things. We think they do need things. And that's because we have grown up to need things. But when kids start out, they're perfectly happy with the pots and pans under the sink. They're perfectly happy playing around their mother's feet. They're perfectly happy being a pain in the neck. They're perfectly happy going into the garage or into the barn and climbing up in the rafters and doing all sorts of death-defying, devilish things. And they just love to go and play in the field. They love to crawl under the grass and pretend that they're ants or snakes or lizards or something like that. The joys of children, the joys of playing, are not anything connected with things. But now let's look at their parents. Their father, he likes to go hunting. He likes to go crawling through the grass, pretending that he's an ant, you know. He likes to go crawling here and there. He's not really hunting. In the first place, he doesn't need it. He buys his food at the store. But he goes out hunting because this is what his forefathers had done, and so forth and so on. Or that this is what his neighbors feel they like to do. But when he goes hunting, he doesn't want to shoot anything. He just wants to go out and be in nature. But you're not allowed to go out and be in nature. You're not allowed to go out and sit in the field and do nothing for hour after hour after hour. Sit there, do nothing after hour after hour after hour. Sit there and meditate. Sit there and listen with it. You're not allowed to do that. But you're allowed to go sit on a stump. Be very quiet, don't want to disturb the animals, and then wait until the deer come by. Sometimes it's hour after hour after hour that you sit there and you wait, and you may smoke your cigarette, or you may smoke your pipe, you may put your earphones on for your cassette radio, but the thing is, that's today. Years ago they didn't have that, you know. And you may, when my dad and I went hunting, and his cronies, they would sit there for hour after hour after hour, just meditating, just being at peace with themselves, just getting away from the world that kept them so busy. And they were playing just like they did when they were children. And you see, we all revert. As children, we're in perfect harmony with ourselves. And then we're told to get busy, get a job, be concerned, take part in your community, take part in everything. And then we don't find time for peace for ourselves. And so we take up fishing. Well, now, the people who fish don't really want to fish. They want to sit by themselves out in the lake or on the shore with their fishing rod. And the picture is always of them falling asleep, you know, and then the fish pulling their rod in the water. And they don't get it. But what are they doing? What are they doing? They're meditating. They're going back en naturel to the natural way of their life, to the natural way of their existence, to the peace that is within them. They're turning to that God center within them. Now, they may not know it as that, but when they come back from the hunting trip, they're not worn out. They haven't been chasing through the trees and through the bushes and through the water and looking for these critters. They've been sitting on their stump, maybe not even going out of their cottage, maybe just staying in it. If you tell your wife that you're hunting, she won't be interested in knowing anything about it till you get home. If you sit on the Davenport at home and you meditate and you don't have the TV on, you're considered to be a boob, you know. You're a nothing. And if you have the TV on, then you're half a nothing, you know. You're not a full nothing. But you're not allowed to do that. Men come home and lay on the Davenport and go fast asleep. And they're sound asleep, aren't they? They're in another dimension. They're experiencing another avenue of life, which they wouldn't be allowed to do. If they're sleeping, their wife says, there's always sleep, there's always And he's just into his other dimensions of beingness, having a ball. And we get so upset with our fathers and our husbands and our wives, not wives so much, but because they take a nap and because they relax. and because they're quiet. And what happens when they do this? They're into that altered state of consciousness. They're into meditation. Meditation is an altered state of consciousness. Meditation means purely to think about. So you're thinking about it. Now, what does John do when he goes to bed at night? Anyone tell me? Raise your hand. What does John do?
Meditates.
John goes bonk and he's sound asleep. That's his standard procedure, right?
Yeah.
He just told us that today in the meditation. He told us that today in his ordination. He ordinarily goes bonk, sound asleep. He said, ordinarily I go bonk, sound asleep. Every night I go bonk, sound asleep. Every night. He said, but last night, I don't know why, but I didn't. And then I thought, I didn't put the tractor away. So he put the tractor away and went back to bed. Wasn't that? Hey, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited. And normally he's not excited about the things of the day. No, really. He has done them. He's completed them. And he puts them away. And then he goes off to his other enjoyment. And off to his other enjoyment. Into his meditations. Now, he may not have thought of that. He may not have realized that. But that's what he's doing. He doesn't have time to sit by the tree in the middle of the day and meditate without somebody coming up and say, John, let's play some volleyball. Let's play some basketball or something, you know. And the kids, they can't leave somebody sitting there. Now, we saw, what was the name of that show with the two Indian boys?
Smoke Signals.
Smoke Signals. Well, the one young man, he was always meditating. He was always, he would close his eyes and he would go off into the realm of thought that he wanted to express. And most of it was true. But there was the little fudgy edges that were not true, that made it charming, that made it delightful. Because he wasn't into truth as absolute truth. It's boring. It had no fuzzy edges. It had no fun to it. So he took the truth and he put fuzzy edges on it. He didn't change anything. The facts are all still there, but he made it fun. He made it a joy. Every single little story he told, if you recall, he made it fun. Even sitting and eating with his grandmother, he made it fun. And they looked at each other and they looked just alike. and they smiled at each other and they were having fun. And if the boy were sitting at the table and all of a sudden he closed his eyes and put his head down like this, his grandmother would say, what's the matter with you, boy? What are you doing there, kid? Come on, wake up, you know. What's this going on? You're a crazy Indian or something, you know? She never said that. She knew what he was doing because she did too. When he would meditate, she would let him alone. She didn't think meditation was stupid or for sissies. She knew that meditation was for the depth of reality. Now, you see, kids and people need hugs more than they need things. And what is a hug? What is the best hug you could ever have? The hug that you give yourself in your inner awareness, in your inner self. The hug that you give yourself when you're meditating. The hug that you give yourself when you're introspecting, when you're listening. Ha! Wow! You know, I just got hugged by God, you know, by yourself, by your divine ideas. Wow! Ellen does that so often, but she didn't call it that. She didn't realize that that was what was happening. But that's what's happening. The divine in you is hugging you and saying, oh, you're listening. Oh, boy, I like that. We're one. We're thinking together. We're in agreement, you know. And then what happens to you? You just float in consciousness and awareness, and even in body. Why do you think some of these strange saints float? Why do you think some of these people can die? Like Swami Rama, how could he die and then come back? Who was orchestrating the program to have him die and to have him come back? You know? Because when he was dead, he was no longer active in his body. He was released from it. His body was no longer functioning. All life signs finished. And he was off wandering around watching Elmer Green doing whatever he was doing. And then he was in that for maybe, 30, 40 seconds. And that's a long time. You count 40 seconds sometime and you realize how long it is. And then he went back to his body and, you know, and he was in gear again. He had done it before. Mm-hmm. He knew it. But you see, those are hugs you give to yourself. Awareness is that you can enter into that inner consciousness, that inner state of awareness so beautifully, so wonderfully. And you do it all the time, but you're not aware. Yeah, did you ever wake up like this in the morning? Or in the middle of the night, you wake up like that with a start? You're just coming back from your altered state of consciousness. You're just coming back from another dimension into this dimension. Now, when you come back like this here, instantly say, I'm awake. I know what was happening. Now, what was, I'm aware of what I experienced. You'll be aware. Remember how Elmer Green was with his biofeedback? He would have the little bell go off when they'd go into the delta state when the sleep. And, you know, and but they had been in the alpha theta state just before the delta state. And so then they remembered the alpha theta state. They remembered how it was. And pretty soon they did it without the machine. They'd go home and they'd just go. I would like to have Elmer Green and others have a list of all those people who had done these things and who had been successful in recognizing their inner vibrations at that inner level, and see what those people have done. If they really had done something significant with their lives after having had that biofeedback experience, wouldn't that be interesting? Because perhaps they did, perhaps they didn't. Nobody says they have to. But the thing is, if you know when you're in that alpha theta state, if you know when you're in that deep meditative state where you are aware of your divine flow, the divine reality, then you will apply that to your life. And certainly they would have applied it in most noble, beautiful ways. That'd be very interesting to know. But again, do you know the answer? I do. Every single one who found his inner awareness is living according to that inner awareness and is a master right now in their reality and their consciousness and whatever they choose to be master, they're master. All of them. Herb, how can you say that? Been there, done that, haven't you?
Okay.
Yeah. Once you know how to drive, do you ever forget? Once you know how to swim, do you ever forget? Once you know how to eat, do you ever forget?
No way.
Once you know how to ride a bike, you don't forget. Even when you roller skate, you don't forget. Even when you get old and you get a little bit unsure of your step, you still know how. It's just you have to get your confidence back. You see, I used to jump from rock to rock here, and like Mark, he was a gazelle jumping all the time. But now I don't jump. I'm careful to move from rock to rock so that I don't mess myself up. Now, if I would get my confidence back that I had before of jumping from rock to rock and da 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 da, it would be there. Now, you laugh. You laugh. Well, what am I here for? To train you. Right? I mean, otherwise, hey, I could be having much more charming experiences than sitting here rehashing with you the things that you already know and getting you to accept the fact that you already know it and then to apply it. Because, you know, you work with little geniuses and you see them respond so quickly and so beautifully and become fabulous, whatever they want to do. Like Mozart, you know, watching Mozart develop his talent and encouraging him as he developed his talent, keeping him away from all those forces that would distract him from it. That wasn't easy, but it's fun. Now, do you do things like that too? I bet you do. But you don't give yourself credit for it. Whatever you in your mind can think of and believe in, you've done. You've done. How many of you have been advisors to presidents and popes and potentates, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three P's, you know. Presidents, popes, and potentates. How many of you have been, that's tops, you know, temple of presidents, presidents, popes, and potentates. We all have to tell our friend about that. Okay, what do you want out of life? What do you want the world to give you? Whatever exciting experience you want, you got. It says here, kids and people need hugs more than they need things. They need to start loving themselves. I cannot hug Ingeborg enough, because she'll always say more. We cannot hug the puppies enough. They always say more. You cannot hug the little children enough. They always say more. You throw them around and you roughhouse them. More, more, more. And their parents come in and say, what do you want to kill our kids, you know? And that's just not the case. But think about it. Think about it. Think of all the wonders that you've done. All the marvelous things that you've done. Whatever you can conceive in your mind as having done. And you did. You may not believe it, but you did. It's fun. I love you.